All right, good afternoon, everyone. Thank you. I apologize that we're getting started a few minutes late. I want to thank Nathan and the entire firm for hosting the lunch and learn. Always wonderful to come down on a weekday and beautiful to see people using their lunch hour to be able to learn a little bit of Torah. Fantastically beautiful. So I wanted to, being that we are now less than a month away from the Yom Tov of Purim, right, with the passage of Tu Bishvat. So again, the next major Yom Tov ahead of us, of course, is Purim. I wanted to spend a little bit of time focusing on what I think is a dramatically amazing idea. And I would dare say an enigmatic concept when it comes to Judaism, when it comes to halacha. And that's the notion of drinking on Purim. Now, the truth is we know that wine is part and parcel of anything and everything we do. Right? Literally, again, from birth until death, wine is part of our lives. From birth, again, for a bris milah, we know that the brachos of the bris are made over a cup of wine. There was an interesting practice. The Gemara Maseches Ma'akatan explains that during the days of the Talmud, there used to be an interesting practice that when a family would come back after burying their loved one, they were given something that's called kos shel tanchumen, a cup of consolation. So you ask yourself, what's the cup of consolation? It was a very, very, very large glass of wine. That was the idea. So the first thing you would have when you came back from the funeral is a very large glass. So literally, again, from cradle to grave, wine is part and parcel of so many of our religious experiences. Again, a wedding, a Sheva Brachas, all of this done around a cup of wine. Shabbos Kiddush, Yom Tov Kiddush, the mitzvah of the Samachta Bechagecha, the biblical obligation to rejoice on Yom Tov, centers around wine. But Purim, of course, is a little bit different. Take a look at number one on your sheet. So there's an amazing Gemara. The Gemara says, Amar Rava, Mechayiv inish levasume bepuria, ad lo yada bein arham lebarach Mordechai. So Rava says a person is obligated. Now, levasume, the literal translation of levasume means to become fragrant. To become fragrant. It seems to be a bit of a euphemism for intoxication. A person should become intoxicated on Purim, Ad lo yada bein ar haman lebarach Mordechai. Until literally, again, a person doesn't know the difference between cursed is Haman and blessed is Mordechai. So, which is a pretty heightened level of intoxication. So that's all. That's all. And if you notice again, there's no dispute recorded. There's no multiple opinions recorded. There's one statement. On Purim, you get drunk. On Purim, you drink a lot. Literally, again, until you don't know the difference between cursed is Haman and blessed is Mordechai. The Gemara then tells a story. Rab of Rabbi Zira, Avdu Su'udas Purim Bahadi Adadi. Rab and Rabbi Zira, they had Purim Su'udah, right? They spent their Purim meal together. Ifsum, they got drunk. And as a result, Kam Rabba V'shachted Rabbi Zira. Literally translated, Rabba got up and he killed Rabbi Zira. So you have to understand this story. Right? So you have two of the greatest rabbinic minds, two of the greatest Talmidei Chacham, rabbinic scholars of the generation, are sitting having their festive Purim meal together. They drink a bit too much, and Rabba literally goes ahead and kills Rabbi Zeira. L'machar ba'i rachmi va'achid. The next day, after the effects of the alcohol wore off, Rabba realized what happened. He davened for Rabbi Zeira, and literally translated, Rabbi Zeira was brought back to life. Listen to the end of the story. L'shana Amar, the next year. So the next year, Rabbi approaches Rabbi Zeira. He says, Rabbi Zeira, I have a great idea. I have a great idea. How about you and I have our Purim Suda? Let's enjoy the Purim meal together. To which Rabbi Zeira very respectfully says, Amar Lei, lo b'chol shaita v'shaita misrach esh nisa. Miracles do not occur every single year. Right, to which Rabbi Zira very respectfully says to Rabba, thank you so much for the invitation. Greatly appreciated. I've made alternate plans for this year. Alternate plans for this year. So this Gemara is the only place in the entire Talmud where you will find a conversation about drinking on Purim. It's not mentioned anywhere else. It's not part of the halachic discussion anywhere else. This is it. So the Marsha, just point out something interesting, the Marsha number two, because the story itself is interesting on a variety of levels. First of all, the story is interesting, the Gemara is interesting, because anytime you have institutionalized drunkenness, it's quite fascinating, because Judaism's perspective in general on drunkenness. We'll get to just a moment. But of course, you have these two great rabbis sitting together and literally going to the point of inebriation where one gets up and kills the other. So the Marsha just points out in number two, just an interesting detail in the story. He says, Chas v'shalom, it does not mean that literally Rabbah killed Rabbi Zeira. Rather, what happened? Rabbah plied Rabbi Zeira with alcohol to the point that Rabbi Zeira was about to die. Rabbi Zeira got alcohol poisoning. He drank too much. He got alcohol poisoning. So the Marsha says, so again, which makes the story read just a little bit better. This way, again, Rabbi Zeira didn't actually die, which ultimately means that Rabbah didn't bring him back from the dead. Rabbi Zeira was very ill. Rabbah davened on his behalf. And ultimately, again, Baruch Hashem, the story is everyone lived happily ever after. But apparently these two gentlemen did not conduct the Purim Suda together after this. So this is the Gemara. So first, let's approach this from two levels. First of all, from two perspectives. One, we'll discuss from the halachic perspective. The second, from the hashkafic perspective. So what is the halacha? What is the halacha on Purim? So the Russian number three, Rabbeinu Asher, one of the earliest halachic codifiers. So the Rush understands, the Gemara says it straight out. The mitzvah on Purim is to drink, and not just to drink a little, but to drink a lot. That's a mitzvah on Purim. That's the end of the story. There's no postscript, there's nothing else. There's a halacha on the books. You drink on Purim until you don't know. There's an Ar Haman and Baruch Mordechai. Okay. The Ran, Rabbeinu Nissim in number four, he takes a bit of a different approach. The Rabbeinu Nissim in number four, and you can see a little bit of a biography here. So if you take a look, he says, four lines in, at the end of the fourth line in number four, the Kasev Rabbeinu Ephraim Zal, Me'ahu Uvda, Dekam Rabba V'shachte L'Rabbi Zira, Kedi'isa B'Gemara, Idchile Memra D'Rava, V'lo Shapir Dami L'me Aved Hachi. So the Rabbeinu Ephraim has a very interesting perspective. He says, think about this for just a moment. Notice the flow of the story. What's the flow of the Gemara? How does the Gemara begin? With the statement of Rava. Rava says a person should go ahead and drink on Purim until he doesn't know the difference between cursed is Haman and blessed is Mordechai. That's the first part. Then what does the Gemara say? What's the next part of the Gemara? What's the next part? For now, we're going to serve lunch after this year, right? That's, you only get to eat if you wear this. What's the next part of the Gemara? Not your question. What's the next part?
Story.
The story, right? What's the story about? Two people, Rabbah and Rabbi Zeira, who followed the advice of who? Of Rava. They followed the advice of Rava. And what happens? What happens? Catastrophic circumstances. What happened is they drank too much, and whether or not Rabbah actually killed Rabbi Zeira or just pushed Rabbi Zeira to drink to the point of alcohol poisoning, it didn't end well. So that Rabbeinu Ephraim says, the Gemara is coming to tell us not to conduct ourselves like Rava. The reason why the Gemara brings up the story is to tell us not to drink so much on Purim. Because look what happens if you drink a lot on Purim. Statement, story, reaction. Here's what happened. Two men went ahead and followed this advice, and look what occurred. Again, disaster. Disastrous circumstances. So you see this incredible machlokis in halacha. So on one hand, the Rosh is saying, no, Rava says drink a lot on Purim. These two individuals were not responsible, okay. But that doesn't change the Iker mitzvah. The primary mitzvah on Purim is to drink until you don't know the difference between cursed is Haman and blessed is Mordechai. The Ran, Rabbeinu Nissim, quoting Rabbeinu Ephraim, saying, no, just the opposite. The story is brought to show us not to follow the statement of Rava. Do not go ahead and drink on Purim until you don't know there's an Ar Haman and Baruch Mordechai. Why? Because at the end of the day, look what happened when two great men, these are great men, follow this particular teaching, disastrous circumstances. So he goes on. So therefore you see a machlokes, a dispute in halacha. If you take a look at number five, the Rambam. So the Rambam, this is a very well-known Rambam. So the Rambam here writes as follows. This is the Rambam in the Halachos Concerning Purim. So the Rambam writes as follows. Well-known Rambam, he writes, Ketzad Chovas Su'udazu. So the Rambam says, so what's the nature of the mitzvah of Suda? So first of all, without getting into all technicalities, what the Rambam also is highlighting is, the mitzvah of drinking on Purim is not an independent mitzvah. It's not like, I have to hear the Megillah, you know, give Matanos Levio and the Mishlach Manos and drink, right? There's a concept of Suda, of having a festive meal. and drinking is part of the festive meal on Purim. This is exceptionally important. There's no concept on Purim drinking outside of the context of the meal. So the Rambam says, Ketzer chova su'udazu, shiyocha basar, vi'itakin su'uda no'e, kifi asher timsa yado. From Purim, you should make for yourself a nice su'uda in accordance with your means. V'shose yayin, you should drink wine, ad shiyishtaker v'yeradeim b'shichlus. It's a famous Rambam. So the Rambam says, and how much should you drink? Ultimately, again, until the point where you fall asleep. Now, where does the Rambam get falling asleep from? Because remember again, what was Rava's statement? You should drink until when? Till when? Until you don't know the difference between Arar Haman and Baruch Mordechai. So says the Rambam, why does everyone think that this is to the... See, when we read the Gemara, we assume you drink to the point of what? Of impaired cognition. So the Rambam says, no way. Do you know what we call drinking to the point of impaired cognition? You know what we call that? We call that, because the carbon is silent, number six, we call that shichruso shalot. That's called getting Lot drunk. What does it mean to get Lot drunk? We know what happened when Lot got drunk. Lot got so drunk that literally, again, he engaged in an act of incest. Not just once, but twice, each night on a different daughter. So there is a level of drunk, and halacha, by the way, calls this, that's called, when you get Lot drunk, shichruso shalot, that's literally to the point where one does not know the difference between right and wrong. Says the Rambam, there is no way the halacha would ever alone let alone encourage drinking to the level of impaired cognition. It's asking for trouble. It's asking for trouble. Therefore, again, it must mean that you drink to the point where you get very sleepy, you fall asleep, and here's the good news, once you fall asleep, you don't know the difference between anything, right? Milchiks and Fleishiks, Haman and Mordechai, whatever it is, makes no difference. By the way, this in general is a very Maimonidean stance. Because understand, the Rambam in general advances the concept of the Derech Hamamutza, the middle path. The truth is, you know, everyone in life believes in the middle path. What's the great point of contention?
Where the middle is.
Who defines the middle, right? Who defines the middle, right? My middle is your right, my middle is your left, but it's my middle. But the Rambam nevertheless understands in general, which is why the Rambam is so bothered by this halacha. It appears that the Gemara almost is encouraging excess. And in Judaism in general, we are all about moderation, all about finding that dramatic middle ground, all about finding what the Rambam calls the Derech HaMamutza, that middle path. So the Rambam looks at this Gemara and he says, there's got to be something more. To tell me that I'm supposed to drink to such a heightened level of drunkenness doesn't make any sense. So it must be drink more than I'm normally accustomed to, or what I'm normally accustomed to, fall asleep. And as a result of falling asleep, I don't know anyway what it is that's occurring. And you begin to see this theme. If you look, take a look at number 7, so the Beis HaBechira, the Me'iri, in his commentary on the Gemara, says, Chayiv Adam Laharbos B'Simcha B'Yom Zeh, U'Ba'achilo B'Shtia, Ad Shelo Yechzar Shum Davar, Mikom Akom, Ein Anu Mitzuvin L'Hestaker, U'Lahafchis Atzmeinu Mitoch HaSimcha. We have to be so careful not to drink to a point where we compromise our own dignity. And when we do things that are beneath ourselves, Shelo Nitztavinu HaSimcha Shal Hololus, Vishal shtus, ela besimcha shal tanuk. Because what happens if people become drunk? The simcha, the joy, is no longer of a holy nature, but it becomes foolishness, frivolity, silliness. Says the Meiri, that's not what we do even on Purim. However, he says, "Shenagei mitoch la'avas Hashem v'odas." Remember again, Purim is a Yom Tov. So because Purim is a Yom Tov, that means everything you do on the day must be holy and must lead me to a greater elevated level of holiness. So to drink in a way that leads to silliness, frivolity, lightheadedness, can't be the halacha. Beis Yosef says the same idea. If you skip a little bit, he says, in number 8, he says, Chai v'shal suri pura, shlosh she yishtaker. It doesn't mean that you should get drunk. Shashichros iser gamar. So here the Beis Yosef has some very strong words. He says, drunkenness is unequivocally prohibited. Drunkenness is unequivocally prohibited. Ve'ein lecha aveira gidola mizo. Very strong words. There is no greater sin than drunkenness. Now, I don't know about that. One could think about many greater sins than drunkenness, right? If I decide to sit in a room by myself and drink myself into a state of drunkenness, I might have other problems. But at the end of the day, is that called the greatest sin? So, of course, what the Beis Yosef really means is getting drunk is a gateway sin, right? It's a gateway sin. What does that mean? He says, "Shigorim legilei arayos shvichos damim v'kama averos ulasan." A person gets drunk, they lose control. That's a gateway to a number of terrible other inappropriate behaviors, lapses in one's morality or engaging in immorality. God forbid bloodshed, as the Gemara explains. Rather, what should you do? Ach yishte yosem ilimudo ma'at. So the Beis Yosef says, the truth is, don't get drunk on Purim. Just what should you do? Drink a little bit more than you're normally accustomed to. So I just want to point out what you see over here. This is very dramatically amazing. You see literally halachic opinions across the entire spectrum. Beginning with Rabbeinu Asher, the Rush, the earliest codifier of halacha, saying, what do you do on Purim? What do you do? Get drunk. Rava says you get drunk on Purim until literally you don't know the difference between cursed is Haman and blessed is Mordechai. That is the halacha on Purim. The Ran, quoting the Rabbeinu Nissim, no, don't get drunk. How do I know don't get drunk? Because look, Rava makes his statement, and then what happens immediately after Rava's statement? What happens? It's the story of Rav and Rabbi Zira. Somebody followed Rava's advice and disastrous results. So don't do it. You have the Rambam, drink a little bit more to the point that what? You drink until the point that what? You fall asleep. Which again, that depends on a person's threshold, a person's tolerance. Drink a bit more till you fall asleep. The Meiri, ultimately, again, drink as much as you want, but you must make sure that your joy is holy and does not descend into foolishness, silliness, and frivolity. The Beis Yosef telling us, just drink a bit more than you are normally accustomed to. Literally the entire gamut of opinions. So what's the halacha? So bottom line, what is the halachic practice on Purim? Let's take a look at number 9. So the Shulchan Aruch takes a very interesting approach. He says, Chayiv inish levasume beporia adlo yada bein arahama lebarach Mordechai. So the Mechaber really just quotes the Gemara verbatim. Rav Yosef Karo, the author of the Shulchan Aruch, quotes the Gemara verbatim and simply says that a person is obligated on Purim to drink to the point that he doesn't know the difference between cursed is Haman and blessed is Mordechai. The Rambo, Rav Moshe Israel's comments, v'yesh omrim dein tzarech lishtaker kolkach. So the Rambo comes along and he says, but you don't have to get so drunk. Ele yishte yoser milimudo. Drink a little bit more than you're accustomed to. The yashen, you'll fall asleep. Umitoch sheyashen eni yodeh ben araham alebarach Mordechai. And once you're asleep, you won't know the difference anyway between cursed is Haman and blessed is Mordechai. So the Shulchan Aruch does something very interesting. What does he do? The Ramah, he almost brings together all of the opinions, right? So go ahead and drink a bit more. Fall asleep, drink a bit more, fall asleep, you won't know the difference anyway. Good, a lot of different opinions combined into one. But the end is really the takeaway message. What's the end? The echad hamarba, the echad hamamit, obilvad shiyechavin libo l'shamayim. But look what the Shulchan Aruch says. Whether you drink a lot or whether you drink a little, what's the most important thing? Make sure that whatever you're doing is for holy purposes. That's how the Ramah ends. So, which is very interesting because if you think about it, it leaves a lot of room for interpretation. You want to drink a little, you want to drink a lot, no problem. What's the goal? What's the ultimate goal? That my Purim should be holy. That's the goal. Purim should be holy. So whether your path to holiness ultimately again is paved with a lot of wine, or your pathway to holiness is paved with a very small amount of alcohol, that's up to you. But the goal ultimately is that you should be like, you know, interestingly enough, Rav Pam, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, was Rosh Hashiva of Torah Vadas, said, how do you know if your Purim was holy? How do you know? He says, if you're early to Shachris the next morning. If you're early to Shachris the next morning, then that's a good Purim. That's a good Purim, then you know that everything you did was mechavein libo l'shamayim. If the next day is a big fog and I can't daven and I can't learn and I can't do anything else, then chances are you may have to modify your Purim a little bit. So now you see the halacha, right? So first of all, you see the spectrum, everything from the Rosh, ultimately again, and to the other end of the spectrum, everything in between. So now you see the halacha of Purim. But what I want to just spend a few moments on, kind of in the last part of the shir, is what about the hashkafa? Because the truth is, this seems to go against everything we believe in. Right? Like I mentioned before, we are the essence of our religion. And part of the beauty of Judaism is moderation. Everything in moderation. Now again, of course, the great challenge in life is figuring out who defines moderation. Right? Who defines the middle path? What is real moderation? But again, leaving aside sometimes the challenge in finding the middle path, we subscribe to this notion of non-extremist behaviors. We are a very moderate religion. Now, sometimes you can't judge Judaism by Jews, right? Sometimes Jews aren't moderate. That might be true, but the religion is a religion of moderation, always finding that middle path. And yet here it appears, according to many opinions, that the halacha is actively encouraging and institutionalizing excess. Excess, drink a lot. Drink a lot. Think about this just a moment. Even, let's say Pesach. Right? Pesach, you also have institutionalized drinking, right? What's your institutionalized drinking on Pesach? Dalet kosos. You have 4 cups of wine. That's not insignificant, right? Even if you're only drinking a revius, right? It's the basic amount. It's still a good amount of wine. And yet there you find in halachic literature how careful one has to be to avoid any semblance of drunkenness. It's incredible. Yet by Purim, it appears that we pull out all the stops. Pull out all the stops. Drink as much as you want. And even the Rama who says, just make sure that it's holy. Okay, I can be a holy drunk. I mean, I can handle that. I feel like I've got that one. There are many things in life I'm not good at. That one I think I've nailed down. That one I can handle. See, which is incredible. Which is absolutely incredible. Right? Going ahead and encouraging or allowing drunkenness, as long as your behavior stays within the pale of responsible religious spiritual behavior, is incredible. So what's the hashkafa? Like, what exactly? Every mitzvah that we have, be it biblical or rabbinic, is there to teach us something. So when Chazal, if the rabbis are instituting a mitzvah of getting drunk on Purim, there must be a deeper message. So now that we've established the legalities of it, right? We've outlined the legal construct of this mitzvah of drinking on Purim. What is the hashkafic? Like, what is the spiritual message of this? So for this, I want to share with you a couple of different approaches that I think are all dramatically different, and each of them magnificently beautiful. So the first is from Rav Kook, Rav Avram Yitzchak HaKohen Kook, who was the first chief rabbi, obviously before the founding of the State of Israel. Rav Kook passed away before the founding of the state. It was British Mandate Palestine, but he was the first chief rabbi. See, he writes a beautiful explanation. Look what he writes, and this is in number 10, paragraph A. Nichnas Yayin Yatsa Sod. So the truth is, we are all familiar with this concept, whether we're familiar because we learned it or because we've lived it, right? All of us are familiar with it, which is literally, again, the wine comes in, the secrets come out. Wine comes in, secrets come out. Now the truth is, that's Chazal telling us that when you drink, a lot of things that you normally keep guarded have a way of coming up. But look what Rav Kook does with this concept. He says, "Umaod anu tzrichin bechayenu." So Rav Kook says, how much do we need the wine to come in order for the secrets to come out? You see, here's what's interesting. When we normally look at that phrase, nichnas yayin yatsa sod, so how do we view that statement? Positive or negative? Negative. Negative, right? Remember, there are certain skeletons that should remain in the closet, right? There are certain things that are not for public consumption. Each of us has stuff about ourselves, either aspects of our personality or things that we've done that are not to be shared. Not to be shared. So I put it away, I lock the key, and sometimes when you drink a bit too much, the stuff that really should not be for public consumption comes out. So generally we read this statement and we see it as a negative. Drink too much, the secrets come out. Rav Kook sees this as a positive. He says, "Nichnas yayin yatsa sod." There are secrets that I'm sitting on. There are secrets that I'm holding in that need to be released, that need to come out. What does this mean? Shesodos hane'elamim yetsu v'niskalu. There are secrets that I know, that sometimes I don't even know, need to come out to be revealed. Because sometimes through the revelation of secrets, we come to know ourselves. I can go ahead and reveal that which is hidden inside of me. Listen to these words. When we come to this point on Purim, where we drink to the point that I don't know the difference between cursed is Haman and blessed is Mordechai, niftar lefachos l'sha'a mikol osan hayidios hamatos osan. Listen to this phrase. For that moment, we could free ourselves from all of the flawed mindsets and ideologies that sometimes hold us captive. Hamolichos osanu kishvuyim ve'in liftos. That shackle us and prevent us from becoming redeemed. Ke'asirim ve'in lahatir. Now he's waxing on a bit poetically. Like people who are kept in captivity and are not free. V'hayidios hamatos halalu hein mastiros yivenas hayisod. So Rav Kook says something amazing. He says, ultimately again, many of us go through life with a certain view of ourselves. I look at myself in a certain way. And a lot of time, that perception of myself is a flawed perception. I have the ability to be great. I have the ability to be special. I have the ability to be something magnificent. But when I look in the mirror, I often don't see that. I just see a regular, ordinary person. And because we have such a limited view of ourselves, we don't accomplish the things we could accomplish. We don't become the people we're capable of becoming. Why? See, we often think that life holds us back, or other people hold us back, or circumstances hold us back. But do you know what the most overwhelming piece of life information is? There's only one person who holds us back in life, and that's us. Only I hold myself back. Now, most of us don't like to admit this, because it's much easier to say, it's my boss, it's my mother, it's my father, it's my second grade teacher, it's my spouse, it's my friends. We have a whole list of people that we can blame for the lack of self-actualization in life. And I love that list. Why do I love that list? Because as long as there's one name that doesn't appear on that list, I'm safe. What's the one name that can never... As long as my name, right? As long as I could blame everyone else for holding me back, then life is perfect. Because I know I'm not what I could be, but what can I do? My father never played ball with me. My mother didn't love me enough. My second grade teacher, you know, treated me differently than everyone else. My spouse is not supportive. My boss doesn't believe in me. Whatever the things, right? It's great. It's fantastic. As long as I have someone to blame, life is great. There's only one problem. Only one little problem with this approach is that it's false and delusional. Two problems. It's false and delusional. It's not true. At the end of the day, other people may play a role in holding me back, but my being held back in life is my decision and my decision alone. At the end of the day, who I do become and who I don't become rests in my hands. So says Rav Kook, something so amazing. We go through life with a certain perception of ourselves, and a lot of times that perception is created by us. It's created, but it's a flawed perception. It's an underperforming perception. It's a perception that's based on me wanting to limit myself in order not to create, or in order to allow for limited expectations of the self. So says Rav Kook something amazing. Nichnas yayin yatsa sod. So what happens? The wine comes in, and what? The secrets come out. Which secrets are we referring to? This is amazing. Which secrets are we referring to? The real me. The real me comes out. That's see, sometimes what happens in life is we create barriers. There's the me I am, and there's the me I know I can become. But I don't want to really acknowledge the me I can become. Because if I acknowledge that me, that creates a whole new level of expectation. So instead what I do is, I build a barrier. There's this me, the me that I am, the me that I can be, that me is hidden away somewhere. I don't want to see that person, I don't want to know that person, because I don't want to create that heightened level of expectation. But what happens? Nichnas yayin yatsa sod. Wine comes in, and the things I think I know about myself go by the wayside. When the wine, you know what happens when wine comes in? If you don't know, What happens when wine comes in is that a lot of walls come down. Right? We consciously or subconsciously erect a series of walls. Some of us have walls, some of us have vaults, right? Some of us have vaults inside of vaults, right? Some of us have vaults that are inside of vaults that are behind walls. We have a variety of different ways of hiding things from ourselves. Most specifically, ownership over my life. I am responsible for who I am and who I'm not. I'm responsible for my successes. I'm responsible for my failures. I'm responsible for cultivating, creating the personality I have, and responsible for not creating the personality I could have. There's a whole beautiful me that is waiting to come out. But very often, I don't want to look at that person because I don't want to create renewed expectations. Says Rav Kook, Nichnas Yayin Yatsa Sot. The wine comes in, and sometimes the walls come down, the vault is opened up, and suddenly I must acknowledge the person, not that I am, but the person ultimately, again, that I have the capacity to become. Says Rav Kook, that's why he writes that phrase, Umaod anu tzrichin b'chayenu. Rav Kook says, oh, how much I need the wine to come in order for the secrets to come out. There's a secret me that is waiting to come out, but that I refuse to access because I'm not interested in creating heightened liability for performing in life. But Purim comes along, and what happens? Nichnas yayin yatzasot. And how much we need the secrets to come out. And not every secret, but how much I need the secret me to be able to come out. So says Rav Kook, that's the hashkafa. Now the truth is, if we're honest with ourselves, I should be able to access the innermost me, and right, without alcohol. Right, I really should be able to do it on my own. But human nature is human nature. And sometimes when left to myself to discover the real inner me, chances are I'm not going to do it. Because most of us do not want to assume additional levels of responsibility. To whatever degree we can coast, we're happy to do so. Therefore comes Chazal on Purim one day out of the year and say, drink a little bit more. Drink a bit more. Why? The walls have to come down. The vaults and the safes have to be opened. And I have to acknowledge the person not that I am. I have to stop looking at myself for what I am and start looking at myself for what I can truly be, for who I can truly be. And so the drinking on Purim is there to allow me to discover the real, beautiful, holy, spiritual, luminescent person I can become that sometimes I tuck away in the deepest recesses of my heart. The wine comes along, and even that which is in the deepest recess is brought to the forefront of my consciousness. That's Rav Kook. Rabbi Nachman of Breslov says something a little bit different. Now, to appreciate Rabbi Nachman, you know, it's not just drinking on Purim that's strange. There's a whole bunch of stuff on Purim that's strange. For example, take a look at number 11. The Shulchan Aruch writes, "Umashinagu lilbosh pirtzufin b'Purim." We dress up on Purim. Strange. But it even gets stranger. The gever lovish simlas isha, the isha kli gever. Cross-dressing is permitted on Purim. Now, under normal circumstances, cross-dressing is a biblical prohibition. A man is not permitted to wear women's clothing. A woman is not permitted to wear man's clothing. It's a serious biblical prohibition that is meant as a safeguard against immoral conduct. Yet, if on Purim I decide to be the pretty ballerina, I have the opportunity to do so. Right? I have the opportunity to do so. Man wants to dress up as a woman. A woman wants to dress up as a man. Totally fine. Totally fine. See, right? Look what the Shulchan Aruch says. He says, "V'yesh omrim da'asr." Some say you really shouldn't do this even on Purim. Aval ha-minog kisvara harishono. But the minog is we permit it. We permit it. The Taz, he writes over here, number 12, quotes over here, "Mefesh simchas Purim ha-minog lahati bazeh." The af agav v'yesh osrim. Right, so again, the Torah says some are very much against this practice of men dressing up like women, women dressing up like men, yet on Purim we allow it. So Rabbi Nachman says, so again, I just want to point out that it's not just drinking. It's not just drinking. The whole notion of costumes is also fascinating. And dressing up is one thing, but dressing up in a way that is normally biblically prohibited, and yet on Purim becomes permitted, is pretty dramatic. So Rabbi Nachman says something so beautiful. Number 13, he says, "Vendizet paragraph Aleph." Vizet bechinas gadol haflagas asimcha maod shlan kol yisrael b'purim the harbos asimcha gadol maod va'osim as kol minei tzchok. Right, we do a lot of silly things. dressing up in general is silly, right? Going ahead and drinking too much is silly. He says, "Ubischok, ubischok laharbos asimcha ki ikur mitzas purim hu asimcha va'al kein osim kol minei schok umili d'shtusa va'osim az meisa shichros d'shus mishol asimcha." You know what Rabbi Nachman says, and this is incredibly amazing. Do you know what the essence of Purim is, says the Rebbe? And get ready for this. Stop taking yourself so seriously. That sometimes there is the idea of taking a step back and just being a little bit foolish in an effort not to take yourself so seriously. Right? Now again, we're supposed to take ourselves very seriously. Supposed to take life very seriously. But not to a point where we can't laugh at ourselves and laugh at life just a little bit. It's an incredible, incredible and profound insight that the entire nature, the entire jocular nature of Purim, and it's not just jocular, it's, remember, Purim, you're doing stuff that is just downright silly. Just, if you were to do it any other day of the year, what would we call it? If somebody dresses up, it's something foolish, what do you call it? Any other day of the year? It's foolishness. It's ridiculous. What are you doing? Yet on Purim, it's a mitzvah. Purim, it's a mitzvah. You drink too much on any other day of the year, what would we say? Well, I guess it depends about your lifestyle. Right? Right? You drink too much any other day of the year? I mean, maybe some people call that football season, right? You know, say, right? You drink too much any other day of the year? We'd say, you're drunk. There's something wrong. What are you doing? Running? What are you running away from? Yet on Purim, we go to the institutional. It says Rabbi Nachman, because it's important to know how to laugh in life. And it's important to know how to laugh at yourself a little bit. See, what Rabbi Nachman is highlighting over here is there's this incredible fine line. Are you supposed to take yourself seriously? Of course, we're supposed to take ourselves. Life is serious. We have significant things to accomplish and significant things to do. But sometimes, if you take yourself too seriously, that begins to border a bit on arrogance. So there is this very fine line between taking yourself seriously, but also knowing how to laugh at yourself. A little bit of schok, a little bit of shtus, some shtuyot is not a bad thing. Not every day. If you do it every day, you're a lutz, right? You do it every day, you're a clown. That's not good. But one day out of the year, to laugh a bit at yourself, right? If you ever, I know in my family, my children are very, 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 they're like, for them, they begin planning the family Purim costume already, again, before Tu B'Shvat. This is the big thing, right? And the truth is, every year I have the same conversations. I'm not doing this. I'm not doing this. And every year I lose, right? And I do it. And we always take the family portrait and we look at it and I say to myself, like, I can't believe I did this, right? You laugh at the picture and you chuckle. Why? Because like during the year, we're very chashuv, right? We're very important. And you know, we conduct ourselves a certain way and we hold ourselves out to be a certain way and we walk around a certain way and we're respected in this. And now, Purim, I'm dressed up like an Amish guy, all right? Or like a cat, like whatever it is that we dress up as. It's incredible. And what does it do? You chuckle a little bit at yourself. And says Rabbi Nachman, it's good to be able to laugh at yourself a little bit. Take yourself seriously, but not so seriously that you don't know how to laugh a little bit at yourself. Take life seriously, but not so seriously that you don't know how to laugh at least just a little bit at yourself. An incredibly dramatic idea. And finally, one last approach, which I think, and there's more Rabbi Nachman on the sheet than what we're going to cover. You'll take a look at it on your own, but take a look at number 15. This is from the Chachmas Manoach. So the Chachmas Manoach is one of the commentaries in the back of the Gemara. So the Chachmas Manoach says something absolutely beautiful. So remember again, our first part of the shiur we're focusing on the halachas. Second part of the shiur is focusing on the hashkafas. So the Chachmas Manoach says, here, I'll tell you the deeper meaning of this mitzvah. Look what he writes. I'm in the right-hand paragraph. Od yesh lomar, dilemashal nakdei, at shiyashlich kol adam hakina vahasina sheish lachabero bepurim. So listen to this. The Chacham Asmanoach gives such a fundamental insight. He says, everyone has people they don't get along with. It's very important, Yisod. Everyone has people they don't get along with. So generally, the people I don't get along with usually fall into one of two categories. There are people I don't get along with because they have hurt me. They've done something wrong to me. They've objectively hurt me, or at least in my mind, objectively hurt me, and done things that have adversely impacted me. Okay? And then there are other people who haven't really hurt me. And if I'm honest, I just don't like them. Why? Because I'm jealous of them. They have more than me. They have more success than I do. Now, the truth is, most of us will never admit to being so petty. Right? So I'll find some other contrived reason why I don't like the person. But at the end of the day, it really stems from a profound sense of jealousy. So the Chachmach's Manoach's model, two different groupings of people we don't get along with. Those who we don't get along with because they have adversely impacted us. Those who we don't get along with because we're jealous of them. So the Chachmach's Manoach says these two people can be grouped into two distinct categories. What are the two distinct categories? There are Hamans and there are Mordechais. The Hamans are the people I don't like in life because they've hurt me. They've hurt me, whether perceived or really, they've hurt me. Those are my Hamans. My Mordechais, remember again, how does the Megillah end off? A dramatic idea. Mordechai ratzui l'rov echav. Mordechai was beloved by the majority of brethren, really? So tell me, what do you have to do to be loved by all of Klal Yisrael? And the answer is, lo haya v'lo yiyah. Never happened. There was never anyone, never anyone who was beloved by all of Klal Yisrael. Even Moshe Rabbeinu is,
Aaron.
Even Aaron was not. You'll see he wasn't, right? They were ready to turn on him by the Chet Egel. Aaron knew that if he refused them by the sin of the golden calf, they would have killed him. So Aaron was good as long as he towed the line. Like any leader, you're just as good, you're just as good as your last deal. Right at the end of the day, as long as he builds them a calf, they love him. Turn on him, say no, look what happened to Chor. They killed Chor. Remember, even Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu was beloved by the entire people. When he died. When he died, his popularity went through the roof. Then everybody loves dead leaders, right? They're incredible. They're the best leaders ever. Even Moshe Rabbeinu was great when he's dead. So ultimately, again, even Mordechai Ratzui L'Rov Echov. Mordechai is beloved by the majority of his brethren. Why? So most of the commentaries on the Megillah understand because people are jealous of him. That's what it was. They were jealous of him. The Ben Ezra writes this, the Rabban writes this, the Radak writes this, the Malbim writes it. He was beloved by the majority because at the end of the day, they were jealous. So says the Chachmas Manach so beautifully. He says people have two different groups of enemies. They have Hamans and they have Mordechais. So again, the Mordechais are those who I'm jealous of. The Hamans are those who have adversely impacted me. What's the goal of Purim? Says the Chachmas Manoach. The goal of Purim is reconciliation. Reconciliation. And reconciliation with who? Reconciliation with your Hamans and your Mordechais. But it's difficult for most of us to reconcile. So the easiest way to effect reconciliation is how? Is how? A little bit of a L'chaim. Or in the case of Purim, a lot of L'chaims. Chayiv inish levasur mei bepurya ad delo yada bein ar Haman lebarach Mordechai. The goal of Purim is to effect reconciliation with our fellow Jew. Or not just the people who are our friends, they are already our friends, but the people who are our Hamans and the people who are our Mordechais. And Chazal realized that sometimes it's difficult to do that without any help on the side. So what did Chazal institute? The notion of drinking on Purim. Because the great part about drinking on Purim, the great part about drinking any day, is that you have a lot more friends, right? Unless you're an angry drunk, right? But most people, right, when they drink, not to the point of drunkenness, but drink a bit more, have much greater ease interacting with people. So Chazal gave us the mitzvah of drinking on Purim, ultimately, so as to allow for reconciliation within the ranks of Klal Yisrael. So if you bring this all together, with this I'll conclude. You bring this all together, you see something amazing. That is there a mitzvah to drink on Purim? So of course, again, it depends. We saw all of the halachic opinions. Everyone from, well, we saw the Gemara, we saw the story of Rabbi and Rabbi Zeira, we saw the opinions of everyone from the Rush, ultimately, again, through the Me'iri. All different types of opinions, halachically. Shulchan Aruch says, what do you do on Purim? How does Shulchan Aruch paskin? How does Shulchan Aruch paskin? Do whatever you want. Echad hamarbe ve'echad hamam it ubilvat she'echavim libel shamayim. Drink as much or as little as you want, but whatever you're going to do, make sure it is a holy experience. That's the halacha. What's the hashkafa? Rav Kook, nichnas yayin yatsasod. All of us have the secret of in the secret, the greatest secret that we keep bottled up is the greatness we contain within. The little bit of wine allows us to knock down the walls, open up the vaults, and access our truly great inner self. Rabbi Nachman, the little bit of wine ultimately allows us to what? Laugh a little bit. And it's important to be able to laugh at yourself, and it's important to be able to laugh at life just a little bit, just one day out of the year. Chachmas Manoach, all of this is an effort to go ahead and bring Klal Yisrael together. We all have our Hamans, we all have our Mordechais, and the little bit of the Lechaims serves as the bridge to be able to bring all of Klal Yisrael together. So however you go ahead and you choose to celebrate Purim, whether you drink a lot or whether you drink a little, I think these three hashkafas of accessing our inner self, finding the ability to laugh at ourselves and laugh at life just a little bit, and finding the true resolve to reconcile with our Hamans and with our Mordechais, is hopefully something that will be part and parcel of our Yom Tov of Purim. And hopefully if we make it part of the Yom Tov of Purim, then at least the reconciliation and accessing the inner greatness of the Meretz Hashem become something we do as part of our everyday lives as well.